malo. Mr. Kumalo, if you can tell us about yourself, your work experience, and if you don't have anything that will affect you in relation to disclosure of information of interest, conflict of interest. There is a, in the Act, there is a Section 17 that talks about disclosure of conflict of interest. So if we are not affected there, you will tell us. But if you are, please tell us so that we don't ask. You have 5 minutes to do that, and then after that, members will ask questions. And then 5 minutes, each question, each member sharing with you. Thank you very much. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson MD. Good afternoon to yourself and the committee as a whole. Chairperson, my name is Mr. Mcebo Kumalo, originally from KZN. I'm a very opinionated type of a person. I am a very authoritative individual, and further chair, I'm very methodological in nature, in a way to give a brief understanding on my character as an individual chair. In my work experience, chair, outside what is provided within my directorship CV, which is at your disposal, it's further the work beyond being the non-executive director, former non-executive director in the National Youth Development Agency, the current non-executive director of .za domain name authorities. I have also served chair in the national and provincial DPOs, which are Organization for the Disabled Peoples, with your South African Youth Council, etc., etc. So, with quite an acceptable level of corporate governance in my at my abilities, chair. Chair, my interest is solely in adhering to the call when I was requested in the call for nomination to stand has been interested beyond what is obvious, chair. Firstly, it's being a license holder of the South African Broadcasting Corporation. That is number one. Considering the 12% revenue that it generates, then, chair, it's translated into a particular voice that, in my view, in my own chair categorization, it gives those people a membership status of some sort with the SAPC, because in their support, or in our support of SAPC, we need to see it getting somewhere. And particularly language, chair, the language in the public, in the broadcasting domain, both in television and radio, has been also a primary point of interest in me serving. But chair, further going to the
thank you very much. Let's hold it there.
Thanks.
You'll elaborate when members ask questions.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. Can I start with you another side again?
Good afternoon, Mr. Kuma. More often when we talk about the SABC, what comes to people's mind is the television version of the SABC than the radio version. If we were to try and change the mindset of the people, which approach will you use? And why do you think will be a good thing to change that approach?
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. I think I'll start with why would it be a good thing for it to be that approach of changing their minds? Because factually, SABC comprises two elements, that of which is television on its own and also radio, which is it's for all nations with all languages. So in effect, that is why it will be of significant importance to change people's mind. But how do we change people's mind in terms of understanding the SABC, not in the context only of television, but further understanding that even the radio broadcasting, it is part and parcel and the significant component of SABC. I think it is the catalyst that could be identified by the SABC in terms of identifying and also researching why is the understanding not in full context, that of comprising both television and radio, so that the strategy can talk directly to the
issue. Okay, Mr. Kumalo. I forgot to remind you what the chair was saying earlier on, that we have 5 minutes, the two of us, to try and manage all these questions, if you can try and be straight to the point. The second Mr. Kubasa, is for you to try and change the mindset about the SABC, that the SABC is not everything bad that is happening in the SABC. Surely there are some other positive things that are happening. If you were to lead a delegation as part of the outreach programs of the SABC, go and talk about some of these good things, how will you approach that particular aspect?
Thank you very much, Chair. Through the catalyst of running the roadshow, interactively both television and radio collaborating their efforts in talking to the masses at the grassroots level so that there is consent and communication with the peoples at the grassroots level so that there is a common understanding and also development of relationships.
What's your view on the debate going on the review? We suggest the review of the role of the executive directors of the SABC in the board. What is your take? Will it be a good thing to do and why?
From a policy developer perspective, in the context of the rationale, when you are to effect changes in a policy, you should be informed first by the actual outcome of the intended policy in place vis-a-vis the evaluation of those intended outcomes, if whether or not they have benefited their intended objective. If not so, Chair, positively or negatively, then it demands that review, then it can be reviewed. But if it's good for the organization, then it must be maintained. For tampering with a policy in a way, it might lead to further consequences which might be extremely high than what we are experiencing with the current setting of the policy. So it's a very technical process, Chair.
What does the SABC stand to benefit from the broadband environment?
I think the SABC stands to benefit from the broadband prospect with a view of the integrating and continuous developing internet or technology. That now television will no longer be only in stationary components, but further going to even in our handsets. So that translates to a particular market that is coming up for SABC. That SABC, if we identify that space and we are able to consolidate, then SABC stands to gain sustainability on that aspect.
Thank you very much. Honorable Kongbel.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Sakubona baba. We are grateful that you have been able to join us so that you can interface with us to help us assess you with the intention to check the possibility of you becoming the member of the board. Can you tell me if the word fiduciary did not apply in management, what would be the problem?
Can you please come again?
If the word fiduciary,
yes.
Fiduciary,
yes.
Did not apply in management, what would be the problem?
The problem would have been that of having a very seriously disorganized corporate governance culture that will be of no commitment, that will be of no accountability whatsoever. Thanks.
But the rules would be there to dictate how to account. The rule would say, let me give you an example, would say, you must be here at 2 o'clock, submit a plan of work at 4:15, report your performance at 5, all those rules. But in the absence of the principle of fiduciary, what would be the problem?
The problem would be lack of commitment and the quality in terms of delivering the corporate governance aspect in terms of working together. And as I have indicated earlier on, Honorable Member, that when you talk about the issues of accountability, it will lack accountability in a very serious manner for fiduciary. Gives us that element of executing our jobs as non-executive directors to our utmost best and with proper compliance and due diligence. Thanks, yeah.
Would you agree with me then that it dictates commitment even that which is not written in the book?
I concur with you, Honorable Member.
Have you ever heard anything about the concept performance information?
It might be new, but I'm open for enlightenment.
In the board charter, they speak about the board giving strategic direction. Why specifically strategic direction? Because in an institution, it's not only strategic direction that you require. You also require technical and operational direction. But for the purpose of the board, why are they only saying strategic?
Chair, in my understanding of the strategic direction, it's for, because the board, in its nature of composition, it is designed only to put it on the nose, without the actual use of its hand. So in our oversight role, we can only engage and develop strategic directions that will take the organization or the company to a particular direction, but without our actual interference with the daily operation of the entity or the company. Thanks.
So you're saying the board is only expected to put only the nose, not the hand.
Yes, that is correct, Chair.
What would be the problem if they put their hands?
The problem with the board putting their hands, it will be a total conflict of interest, because you cannot be the referee and the player at the very same time. Considering that you are the accounting authority to the accounting executive, then the executive in the organization or company reports to you. So therefore now, if you interfere with such processes, then you report to who?
My last question, would you share with us what do you think currently are the financial management challenges or sound financial management challenges of the SABC? That's my last
question. Chair, that's why in my observation, Chair, and in my interaction with the country known issues of the SABC, with reference to what you are asking right now, Chair, or in my position, I would not advocate on anything that maybe would be considered to be a lack of management system. But I think, Chair, it would be maybe the lack of adherence to policies and other regulative documents or frameworks that are there in terms of executing financial transactions and the each and everything that involve finances of the organization. So if that area could be strengthened with the human resource personnel that will be committed to the core of those documents, and also with proper monitoring and evaluation, consistent committee that is on toes on its governance job in terms of committees.
Honorable Pondam, or between the two of you, one can start.
Thanks, Mr. Khumalo, for making yourself available. It's Phumzile Vandam here. So, when we appoint people to the board, we also look at your record, particularly in serving in other boards. So you served on the NIDA board from 2009 to 2012, am I correct?
That is correct.
Yes. Now, that NIDA board term was one riddled with corruption, mismanagement of public money. Just look, read off some of the things that happened. I mean, there was 62 million irregular expenditure. There was 106 million spent on a kissing festival. Board members like yourself were paid 430,000 to attend 9 board meetings. So you're paid 47,000 per meeting as a NIDA board member. NIDA money was used to pay for ANC Youth League conferences. 28 million was spent on accommodation for NIDA board members. Why on earth should we place you on the SABC board if this is your record serving on the board?
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm a report orientated type of a person, Chair, and with such a report, Chair, in my saving in that organization, Chair, I have not been privy of such, honorable member. You will pardon my less of knowledge in the said wasteful expenditure to the proximity of 62 million per se. With the kissing party, I am not sure, Chair, of the kissing part.
Okay, let me correct you. All this information was available in the Auditor General's reports of the respective financial years. And what one would assume as a board member, you will request a copy of the annual report of a specific year. You'll review it. And yes, but I mean, do you deny receiving, for example, 47,000 Rand for a single meeting as a board member? I'm sure this is something that you're aware of.
I think, Chair, for consistency purposes, the member talked of the wasteful expenditure of the 62, of which I still indicate, Chair, I have not been privy in the AEE, in the documents of the organization of such. I think, Chair, in that regard, I wanted to go to the kissing party. I don't recall, Chair, in South Africa, going to Mexico and receiving an award of a kissing party. But all of us together, the collective youth of South Africa, when we are awarded to host an international event of that magnitude as South Africa, it was significant and it was putting us as South Africa to the map, and we were all in agreement that we could hold this particular event, for it put South Africa into a strategic a position. The unfortunate part is that with conflicting and opposing political views, when it was at home, then the tune happened to change. But it did not dispute, however, the significance of having that youth international assembly vis-a-vis the kissing party that I am not aware of, Chair. Thanks.
Okay, just to let you know, 2012-13 NIDA annual report, 62 million irregular expenditure. And all the other information I quoted was also equally from annual reports, but you don't want to be honest about that, so we can move on. There was an issue in 2010 about a dispute you had with a neighbor. Could you please elaborate a little bit more about what happened?
Oh, thank you very much, Chair. There was an issue that is at the disposal of the Honorable Member, Chair, of which I assume on top of that issue, the member happens to have the exonerating document that talks to that particular issue. So I think it's self-explanatory, Chair, in that exonerating letter, Chair. Thank you very much, ma'am.
I'm afraid I don't, actually. All I have is a line from a media report that you pulled a gun on a neighbor. That's all the information that I have. So if you have information that exonerates you, please do bring it forward, because that's all the information that I have.
In fact, Chair, I am sure that it is at the disposal of the members, because it was these particular parliamentary processes that required that, Chair, I also presented such a document that exonerate me from that. So it will be seriously very odd for the member to have in her presence the information, but not having the exonerating document. I still, Chair, wish to appeal before the member that the document is available exactly at the source where she happened to extract that particular information. Thank you very much, Chair.
That's the end of it on this one. Completely lost about all this. But it's fine. Is the information that is in front of you? Honorable Davis?
Thanks, Chair. And thank you, Mr. Kamala, for making yourself available. I just want to follow on from what my colleague was saying about the irregular expenditure and corruption that was perpetrated by the NYDA when you were a board member. Now, I find it very difficult to believe that you were not privy to annual reports and Auditor General's reports and other such important documents which outlined this, the extent and the scale of what was going on in terms of irregular expenditure. If you were not privy to those documents at NIDA, how do we expect you to be privy to those documents at the SABC? How are you going to carry out your role as a board member at the SABC if you have a track record of not being conversant with the relevant documents when you were at another institution such as NIDA?
Thank you very much, Chair. In understanding that in corporate governance, Chair, it is a collective environment at which we are all responsible as citizens, as organization in our individual operations or ideologies, and further in our fiduciary duties as non-executive directors. In such a chair, I would be able to observe that through the common practice that if organizations, peoples, or individuals happens to have an evidence that is of a corruptive nature, Chair, we are all able and responsible, Chair, to provide that and bring that before the courts and before the law enforcement authorities, so that issue, it is properly challenged and it is properly followed in a justice course, so that those particular individuals who undertaken that particular exercise are able to be brought to book. So if that has not been the case, none of us all, including the members asking questions, have ever done that. I think, Chair, I am safe to say we have all left our fiduciary duty, and if we have left our fiduciary duty, we need now to develop and start now to put more attention in terms of countering these activities. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. That was a very unsatisfactory answer, but we'll end it there. My second question to you is, on the SABC board, we had a very unfortunate history of board members lying about their qualifications, and I'm talking specifically about Ellen Shabalala. Now, on your academic record, it's not clear whether you completed your Bachelor of Social Science, because you don't submit the actual certificate in your curriculum vitae. Can you just confirm for us whether you did in fact complete that degree or did you not complete the degree?
I think in the curriculum vitae that is sent by Mr. Kumar, Chair, it indicates that it's a social science academic record, for there is no degree certificate that is there, and it is also written second level. That means I've ended at my second level academic record due to national responsibilities. So I don't consider that of any lies. I have not lied of anything please read if there is no second level there. That means I have omitted something. Thanks, sir.
Thank you. Nobody's accusing you of lying. I just wanted to make sure. So you, as you say, you don't have the Bachelor of Social Science qualification.
Okay, can I come again?
No, you've just confirmed that you don't have that degree. That's absolutely fine. My last question is that at the beginning of the interview, you said that you were very opinionated. Somebody else who was very opinionated was somebody called Claudi Motsoeneng when he was at the SABC. What is your opinion of Claudi Motsoeneng and his tenure at the SABC?
I think I am not privy to his infect operation and to his happenings and dealings in the SABC, so I would prevent myself from preempting my thinking and making particular assertions which will not be founded. But what is legitimately founded and also have undergone processes resulted to the current required situation that we are having thus far. It's what is happening. It's what you can put on the table that this is what is happening. I don't want to
present. Thank you. Can I ask you, are you familiar with the Public Protector's report on Claudi Motsoeneng? And are you familiar with the ad hoc inquiries report on to the SAB on the SABC while Claudi Motsoeneng was the COO?
Time is up. Honorable Madisha.
Yeah, thank you, sir. Mr. Kumalo, you have no.
But manage your time properly, because the fight is between the two of you. If you don't manage it, it's not my call. But you can go ahead and respond there, Mr. Kumalo.
On the previous member's question, Chair, with the Public Protector's report that has been presented before SABC, Chair, I would have undergone the due processes that it must undergo, of which, Chair, it's supposed to come before the board. The board adopts the report. And if the board, as a collective, happens to have a particular view and a thinking, it is legal, Chair, to send the document for review, considering the later developments in terms of the Public Protector making the Public Protector's overreach. So if there is no element of an overreach, therefore the Public Protector's document is fully implemented and it is taken as remedial actions and it's compliant to exercise it. Thank you very much.
Okay. Honorable Madisha.
Thank you.
Just before you speak,
yes.
Members must manage their 5 minutes with the candidate. Otherwise, we'll get out of this place at 12 minutes. Honorable Madisha.
So, Kumalo, you have no prior media broadcasting and let's say practical experience. I can give you a number of examples. What skills and experience do you believe that you have that make you a suitable prospective candidate for this board?
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. The skills making me a suitable chair, one is the experience on me serving to the directorship positions of which it's of a corporate governance nature. And secondly, Chair, it's my competency and competency in three aspects, the understanding, which is an acceptable understanding of the SABC as the media and also as a public broadcaster, considering that I've served for a particular 2 to 3 years in the SABC Youth Advisory Panel, that gives me a little bit of an insight of the SABC. And further going forward, with the expertise, Chair, that I have acquired in my consistent director development with the Institute of Directors of South Africa, that I am bringing in, Chair, the King IV application of the corporate governance in our development. So I think, in a nutshell, that is but the least I can mention thus far that I am about to bring. And consistency in government, considering that the actual happenings that resulted to the dissolution of the board, it was lack of corporate governance. In fact, it was the lapse of corporate governance, of which I have never served in a body that has ever lapsed any corporate governance. Thanks.
2 minutes left to share.
Between the two of you are left with 2 minutes. Between you, Honorable Madisha, and the candidate.
You indicate that you serve in the Youth Advisory Panel, but that does not actually clarify that you have the true understanding of what should be your role on the board that we're talking about at this moment.
Thank you very much, member. I think if you couple it with my board experience and also with that little bit of advisory role within the SABC chair, it gives you, in fact, a duplicated package of one individual having acquired corporate governance skills in other entities of which the board operates within those parameters, and also a little bit of what is SABC and what SABC wants to achieve as a national broadcaster. So I think in that is why I consider myself as a member that you can look upon, in fact, if you happen to make your choice. Thanks.
Thank you for the 2 minutes.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Can Mr. Mcebo please confirm or dismiss the fact that during his tenure as a member of the NYDA board, there were negative reports from the AG?
Can come again, sir?
Can you confirm or dismiss the allegations that there were serious negative reports about the NYDA during your tenure?
Chair, I can confirm and dismiss, Chair, that in context, Chair, I have never been privy of any mismanagement report on the finances with reference to the wasteful expenditure, Chair. That I am not disputing that the Auditor General have issued such. We operate in a corporate governance where some of the information you deal with particular individual of particular characters. In a way, information, it happens to come even late in some occurrences. Sometimes if members are ethical enough or executive is ethical enough, information is able to. So that is the actual day-to-day or part-time issues that we deal with and the experiences of us as board members, considering that we are not full-time, we are part-time. We only get to the information at the time when we deal with that particular information, that we put our nose only but not our hands. That is the dilemma that we find ourselves as board members in, Chair, with that regard. Thanks.
A last question, Chairperson. Does the gentleman sitting in front of us understand why we are embarking on this process? At some point, if I may remind him,
the parliament had to dissolve the board of SABC for some reasons. This is the reason why we are where we are today. Can you reflect, even if it's almost 1 minute, on that history?
Of the inconsistent board meetings which were sitting without correcting, member resigning to the level at which one member was standing in, considering himself as a board member in the absence of the others. I think that is the little bit of the info that I can share. I have observed also in the media space. Thanks, sir.
Okay, I might not be satisfied, but I thought the gentleman will talk more, because if he find time to read, he would understand that the tenure of the previous board did not come to its conclusion, but it was dissolved. I wanted him to speak on those. As a person who understands corporate and all the things that he claimed to be understanding, I thought he was going to be a little bit clearer, because I'm sure there is no way that the board can be dissolved because of the non-attendance of one person. I thought he was going to elaborate a little bit.
In fact, if I said it correctly, I said it started with the number of board members. The issue of resigning of board members for whatever reasons, and further, the inconsistent, because I think I followed up on the ad hoc committee processes, whereby there were serious arguments in terms of legitimate meetings, in terms of correcting, to qualify those meetings to sit as a board and take particular decisions. I said to an extent that all members then resigned up until one member decided that he will not resign for whatever reason, up until that process unfolded and the member resigned. So I did not say the member, the board was collapsed or dissolved on the basis of one member's attendance. Thanks, Chair.
Is it a follow-up or not? And then you open the door for everybody.
I want to ask a straight question to Mr. Kumar. Is there an instance in your life as a board member NYDA, where for a single meeting you received 47,000 rand? Forget what the AG said. I'm talking about what could have happened in your life.
Chair, in my bank account, Chair, I have never received such an amount. I have never received such an amount. I was an ABSA bank user. And if such information can be collected, it seriously can be collected
right.
And also compared.
All right. Honorable Kalako, you want to round up?
No. Thank you, Chair. I'm covered by the colleagues.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kalako and Mr. Kumalo. All right. Mr. Kumalo, do you have any question to members?
But just one question, Chair. What character persona or caliber of a person that the committee anticipate to be the credible candidate to serve in the board of such an extraordinary expectation, Chair? Thank you.
Mr. Kumalo, This Committee on Communication advertised for a SABC board, and that advert puts across the criteria of the people that we need in the board. I'm sure you responded to that, or whoever nominated you responded to that. But over and above that, one of the person who will ensure that SABC goes back to its former glory, not the past one. The people who are not corrupt, people who are not misusing workers in SABC, misusing in, as in using them for their personal interests. Very honest people, people with integrity. Corruption-free people. And people who stand up even if any politician tries to manipulate. Independent, very clear on what is expected from them. We want that kind of a person to the board. Honourable members, hope I represented you well. That's the only question you have, Mr. Kumar.
That will be all. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Go well wherever you are going. I assume you're going to KZN.
Yes.
Somewhere in KZN.
Yes.
Which part of KZN?
In Scottsboro, the south coast of the world.
Escott.
It's Scottsboro.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay. I'm Hamburger Sege, Baba Kumar.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. You're bringing the next candidate, Temengos? Members, we're not doing well in terms of time. We're not doing well in terms of time at all. No. You guys want to ask questions? Just to welcome you whilst we are still organizing ourselves, Mr. Rambao. This is the panel composed of Portfolio Committee on Communication. What we need from you is just to introduce yourself, tell us about yourself. As you tell us about yourself, just remind us in summary of your work experience and all of that. We have 5 minutes to do that. But also if in the Broadcasting Act disclosure of conflict of interest, you are affected by that clause, then you'll have to tell us up front. So that we stop interviews. that's on a lighter note. But tell us if you are affected by that clause. Over to you. It's 5 minutes, and then when members ask questions. Each member will ask questions within 5 minutes. And that 5 minutes will be shared between yourself and members. Your responses and questions, 5 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Victor Rambau. I was born and raised in Venda. I did my primary school there and secondary school there. Then I moved to Johannesburg to pursue my tertiary education schooling at the then Wits-Technikon, which is now UJ. I achieved BTEC in operations management. I continued to pursue my studies with Wits Business School, where I achieved the management advancement program. I then further on did my master's in business administration at Milpark Business School. From a career point of view, I started my first job as a factory cleaner, where I started to understand how the factory works, and within that period where I was a factory cleaner, I was given an opportunity to design some of the improvements within the factory. And that's when my continuous improvement career started. I then moved to one of Siemens meter manufacturing entity, where I managed the facility that was producing prepaid meters. Thereafter, I moved into the Siemens corporate office, where I led a team of industrial engineers in continuous improvement. We serviced the internal Siemens business and also customers that were supplied by Siemens. After that, then I moved to Standard Bank as one of the continuous improvement managers, where I then worked together with a team of, again, industrial engineers to improve the effectiveness and efficiency on how Standard Bank delivers its product and services to the market. I further then opened my own entity, which was a construction entity, where we actually manufactured the houses. I then opened a supply chain consulting firm with a partner, and then went back to Standard Bank, where I am currently full-time employed. However, I am seconded at NSFAS. I've been there since last year. I'm currently at NSFAS working as an acting chief operations officer. With regards to conflict of interest, I've looked at Section 17. I do not have any interest from a business point of view within the broadcasting environment, neither does my wife have, or any of the related family members. So the clause as it is, I don't think it will affect me. Thank you.
I'll start with Honorable Kongubede, and then Honorable Sedi, and then Honorable Van Damme, in that order.
Rambau, you appear to have spent a lot of your time in the industrial sector. You, not just as a participant there, but as a key role player, innovative, with an ambitious mind, demonstrate your initiatives and your wide geographical travel. What makes you want to become a member of a board? Because that could confine you.
Thank you, sir. The experience within NSFAS, where I was privileged enough to work with the board, I realized that for organization to be sustainable from both financially and the stability with regards to governance, it is critical that those who have the skills are actually given the opportunity to contribute in various sectors where they can then be afforded such an opportunity. Furthermore, with regards to turning around entities, the experience that I have, which both I've acquired outside and inside the country, I saw it in practice within the space of NSFAS, that it comes handy when you engage with both executive managers and your senior managers. So it is on that basis that, given what SABC has gone through, I truly believe that my experience will come handy within the structures of SABC. Yes, at times one could find himself confined, but given the understanding on how state-owned enterprises function and the regulations that are in place, I believe I should be able, and I will be able rather, to contribute effectively into the turning around of SABC.
You just said, taking into account what SABC has gone through, can you cite two or three aspects of that journey of SABC that you're worried about? And tell us, what would you do about it if you become a member of the board?
At the core of it is really how the executive leadership at the time floated the primary mandate of SABC, which as a result, the compromise, the actual existence of SABC with regards to financial stability. There were instances where employees were actually subjected to bullying. Those who actually were within the editorial space. Thirdly, the conflict which one could relate to with regards to editorial independence being compromised. So having observed those three and having acquired the experience with regards to what the executive authority's role and responsibilities are, what the executive leadership of the organization's roles and responsibilities are, I truly believe that being in that organization, one will be able to contribute positively.
But you have articulated the aspects,
yes. And
you just said you could contribute. What would you contribute?
Firstly, with the experience around organizational turnaround, at the core of any entity, there are three key objectives that I believe if any organization pays attention to, it can then turn around the organization. The first one looks at how effective are you with regards to management of cost. SABC currently, from a financial point of view, we know that they are on the negative. The second one, the material that SABC distributes and the response from the market is predominantly based on the quality of the actual content. I believe that one can contribute on how we can increase the level of quality of what comes out there. Thirdly, with the digital migration, what I've realized...
That's the point, Mr. Rumba. You keep on saying you can contribute. If you say you can contribute on the content, anyone can say that. What is it that you can contribute on content?
So with regards to, maybe I should go back to what I believe would be the... Okay. With regards to the content, the mandate of SABC is twofold. One that talks to the public broadcasting services and the other one talks to the public commercial services. I've noted that the key sales point of the SABC when it comes to content predominantly lies around your local dramas, which are soapies. The top three performing actually shows are around that. Now, there is an opportunity for SABC to partner with private producers where creativity can then be brought forward, which will, as a result, help SABC to increase its revenue. And I think there's an opportunity there to open the window for private producers to then be part of the content production within SABC. I believe...
Thank you. The 5 minutes is a long time ago.
Oh, Ramba, Uri. Let me indicate upfront that we have 5 minutes to interact.
Yes.
So it works to your advantage to be very brief so that you are able to do justice to the response. More often when we talk about the SABC,
what comes to people's minds is the television vision than the radio vision. Which approach would you utilize or implore to ensure that we change people's mindset around this particular aspect, and why would you do that?
Thank you. SABC has got 18 radio stations, and those radio stations are not visible from most of TV viewers. So what I will do, I will then, within the TV spectrum, expose some of the radio shows that run in these radio stations. As an example, you could then have a broadcast of Radio Metro that is seen on TV, so that you can then start to generate interest on that particular radio station and the radio program, and similarly across all different languages.
I'm sure you are aware that so far, I think in the last few years, we have dissolved the board of the SABC about 2 or 3 times. So if appointed a board member, what is it that you can do differently to avoid another dissolution?
For me, what is key is intellectual independence. My belief is what brought down the previous boards is that they allowed themselves to be dragged along the collusion ideologies that the executive leadership had. The mandate of the board is clear. The mandate of the executive authority is clear. The mandate of the executive management is clear. So if we operate within the confines of the board's mandate, I think we should then be able to succeed.
What's your view on the debate which says there is a need to review the powers and the role of the executive directors in the board?
My view is in line with some of the findings of the committee, ad hoc committee report, is that if you look at the legislative framework that we have in place, I'm of the view that it's a problem. It's more around the discipline around implementation of how each level of management should then behave. For me, it's critical for the board to then take cognizance of that, and also for management to also realize how they should operate. So on that basis, I don't believe we need to really change the course of the executives.
What's the current state of affairs in terms of the relationship between the SABC and the regulator? And if appointed a board member, how do you see yourself assisting in improving that kind of relationship?
The current relationship, I must say, the current interim board has done a lot of work to try and bring back that relationship. However, there are changes that within the regulator, they impact the SABC negatively. If I may use as an example, the introduction of different quotas with regards to local content vis-a-vis music, that's something that I'm of the view that the SABC board and the regulator need to sit down and engage with regards to the negative impact or the possible impact of such changes to the SABC, because there's an element of revenue collection that depends on the public's confidence around what is being broadcasted through to them. So we will need to engage on that aspect.
The very last one, Chairperson. Can you raise the morale of a South African who has lost hope about the SABC as part of explaining some of the positive things that are happening in the SABC? You are leading a delegation of the SABC board as part of the ACT programs. Can you try and sell the SABC to the public?
As members of the board, we have managed to stabilize the operation of SABC, which is a result of the view that there may not be a need for SABC to go and source funding in the sense of bailout. With regards to the human resource, which are your key assets with regards to the content that we deliver. We've managed to stabilize the loss of those resources to competitors. We've now realized that we're no longer losing as many people as we were before. And lastly, SABC being a state entity, it is our view that by bringing it through to the people and also engage with you with regards to how best you want to see SABC functioning with regards to content, we are of the view that collectively as South Africans and the leaders of the SABC, we should then build this entity and the brand to be what we want it to be.
Thank you very much. Can I go that side? Honorable Funda.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, Mr. Rambal, for making yourself available. I see that you are the COO of NIDA. NISFAS, different entity. I think that should be quite a lot of work. I mean, where will you find time for the SABC board?
Thanks. Correct. There is a lot of work in that role. But I'm a strong believer of co-creation of any strategic initiative in the organization. So being the CEO does not mean that I work independently of my team. So if we co-create the work that we are supposed to deliver, it means we collectively manage and own the performance objectives of the operations department. Mine is just to lead the team, not to actually get involved in the operations of the team, because my true belief is those who are actually doing the job are the ones who are more equipped and more knowledgeable to give you better results. So with that in mind, I believe that I will be able to balance between my role as the acting COO and as a board member.
Thanks. I mean, you've never really served on any other board except on NISFAS, and you don't really have any broadcasting experience. Why have you decided to apply for the SABC board? What would you like to achieve as a member of the board?
And it's precisely for that reason that I don't have any broadcasting experience, because I believe that SABC needs diversity in the skills of how to manage the entity. It needs fresh ideas. And this is not by any means discounting those who've got broadcasting experience. But if you only have one set of skills, you're bound to only focus on one way of doing things. And with me coming in without any broadcasting experience, I believe I'll bring that element of diversity within the board.
Yes, you mentioned something I'm very fond of, fresh ideas, innovation, a different way of thinking, new ideas. What are your fresh ideas and innovative ideas about improving what the SABC does?
The global trend within broadcasting and business is that most organizations are moving into the digital space. In South Africa, we're not moving fast enough. And it's an element of time, because from a resource point of view, I believe we have enough resources to do that. That's where I will start. And if I may use an example, one of the key issues around SABC is revenue collection. The government has got enough facilities where SABC can showcase its digital abilities. As an example, your digital billboards in airports. That's something that we can use to generate revenue, and I've not seen SABC moving in that space. Digital marketing, where you can have a revenue share stream with the providers of your network in the sense of cell phones. As SABC, we're not playing in that space, and we have enough content that we can actually distribute within the digital platform. So those are some of the things that I would want to bring on the table.
SABC is already sharing a lot of the content in the digital space. How would your idea be different from how they're doing it right now?
I don't think it would be more an issue of it being different, but to complement so that you can then have a wide variety of where you can share your digital material. And you're right, we already have, as SABC, they already have digital content. But the space, in my view, is still unlimited. We're not covering enough within South Africa and also outside South Africa. I read in one of the articles on the SABC report where we managed for the first time to have a voting process for Metro Awards, because we also have an African category that was in the digital space. Those are some of the things that we need to explore more on them and expand across the entire continent and all countries in the continent.
My last question, there's been an idea put out that the SABC should start charging a license fee for digital content. Do you think that South Africans should be charged a license fee for cell phones, for laptops, for and tablets?
No, I don't believe so. They should be charged on the basis of consumption of the data bundles that they are using to use that digital content. SABC already is a state entity. South African citizens are contributing to its financial stability through taxes. Now, coming with the double taxation system, I am of the view that it, at this particular moment, when we're trying to build the reputation of SABC, bringing it back to people by introducing this element, we may then just regress on our efforts.
So I just wanted to clarify. You said they should be charged the data. So you're saying that SABC should charge them additional data? I just want to get you wrong. I want to be clear about what you're saying.
When you download the digital content, instead of that digital content to be licensed to the users to pay, SABC should then have a revenue sharing model with the providers of the data space, which means if you're downloading a 14 megabyte and it's costing you 20 rand, the share profit of SABC should come from that, not on the content that you have downloaded.
Thank you very much. Honorable Davis.
Thank you, Chair. Can you tell us the difference between a state broadcaster and a public broadcaster in theory? And can you tell us whether, in your opinion, the SABC in the last decade has acted more as a public broadcaster or more of a state broadcaster?
So a state broadcaster, it would be an entity that is funded and controlled from an editorial content point of view by the state, which means the state dictates what should go on air and what should not go on air. A public broadcaster, again funded by the state, but there will be editorial independence within the confinements of the law, and given our constitution, there is enough flexibility to allow for that. With regards to the past decade, there are elements or rather evidence that suggests that there was a time where SABC as a public broadcaster wanted to be turned into a state broadcaster. An example that I can recall, when in Tshwane there was violence during that uprising, we didn't see enough content being broadcasted by SABC, and one could conclude that there must have been an instruction to say don't broadcast that, which means there was interference on the editorial content. We had an issue, an unfortunate one, in the mining industry of Marikana. Most of that content came through to the public through a competitor, but we didn't see that within SABC. And again, on that basis, one could conclude that there was an attempt to turn it into a state broadcaster.
Thank you. The SABC is governed by various statutes, including the Companies Act and the Broadcasting Act. If those two acts come into conflict with each other with regards to the governance of the SABC, which act, in your view, should take precedence, and can you give a reason for your answer? Thanks.
The Broadcast Act should take precedence, but obviously with reference to the Companies Act. For one reason, SABC is a public entity, so the Broadcasting Act being a public act, that should supersede the Private Companies Act, because the Private Companies Act predominantly looks at private entities. However, one needs to emphasize that in applying the law, the overall objective or the intent of what you want to achieve must rise above any conflict within the two laws that you're dealing with.
Okay, my last question. As you have noted already, that you feel that the SABC has become more of a state broadcaster and that there's been instances of political interference, when we're looking for board members, we're looking for people of courage, people who can put their head above the parapet and can stand up to bullies. Can you give us an example in your career where you've swum against the tide and taken on somebody or stood up for a principle that was unpopular, but you continued because you believed very much in that principle?
I will use one of the examples when I was still working for Siemens, when I was leading a project team in Botswana. We were instructed by the project executive not to disclose the losses that we had picked up on the ground. And for me, one key issue, which was an ethical issue, was to then say, the company already is bleeding because it's subjected to so many forms of credit. And precisely because of these reasons where your stock movement is not shown out in the right way. I'm not necessarily a finance person, but those are the things that you need to bring forth in your financial statements. What the project executive was pushing us to do was to then say, allow the company to close its financial year without disclosing the loss. Then at a later stage, you can disclose it. And I stood my ground and said, we are seeing this loss now, and it must be reflected now. Because if we then wait at a later stage, it will come back to us as company to say, you allowed this to go through. And what was critical was your financial institutions would only lend you money on the basis of your financial submissions. I was then asked to leave site. We were in Botswana. It was Friday. I was told I must go back to Johannesburg. I was going to be dealt with on Monday. Monday, I was expected to be in the office, but I drove back to Botswana because I was posted in Botswana. For me, what we were meant to deliver to the client, which we had signed as an entity, was more critical than for us to fulfill our individual objectives within the company. Had we not disclosed the stock losses, it would have meant our team would be seen to have performed, which meant we were going to be able to get bonuses. But that was going to be a short-lived glory because beyond the financial statements being submitted, it was all going to come out. And that's when I stood my ground.
Thank you very much. Honorable Matisha.
Let me indicate that I actually went through your CV seriously. And I'll only ask one question. You have no prior, and I think that was raised. You have no prior media or broadcasting experience. Nor have you served on the board of major companies except your current employer. Okay. Now, what skills and experience do you believe that you have that make you a suitable prospective candidate for the board? I say this because I move from an intra-personal purview of this committee that you should be having the knowledge of a number of areas such as broadcasting policy, broadcasting regulations, the media law, frequency planning, etc., etc. It's a number of them, okay? Journalism, social and labor issues, I can't finish them, okay? Now, will you be able to deal with all these things? Because, like I'm saying, having no prior knowledge of this particular area, for me, this becomes a problem. Thank you.
Thanks. You mentioned quite a few, but I picked the ones where I believe I'll be able to add value. And maybe let me start by saying, no, I won't be able to add value on all of them. And it is my view that board members should complement each other, in that if we get one skill set, we'll run in one specific direction. So the diversity of skills within the board will then help for us to move forward. You're making reference to my CV. The theme of the things that I've done lies around strategic turnaround. When I joined NSFAS, we were mandated to turn around NSFAS in the way that it manages its finances. We've managed to achieve that objective. And we are still on route to achieve more objectives. Within the supply chain management, when I joined NSFAS, we closed on a clean audit. We are again on route to close this coming financial year on a clean audit. So these are some of the skills that I've acquired, and I believe that I'll be able to contribute in those specific areas. Lastly, as an operations expert, the success of any entity predominantly lies on its ability to execute its strategic mandate, and that is within the operations department. Now, working together with the executive team in us co-creating the strategic direction of the organization, that's where my contribution would be. And it's not necessarily focusing on broadcasting. It's on how you manage an organization efficiently and effectively.
Thank you. Honorable Tillich.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Sir, I have noted your CV, the knowledge, but if you can speak on the knowledge that you are bringing, especially the turnaround insofar as the SABC is concerned, given the fact that there's an ad hoc committee report that must stabilize the board.
I've spent at least 13 years of my career in the banking space, where structured deals with regards to raising finances and fundraising are done. One of the key challenges around SABC is on how to remain financially sound in raising finances. That is the area where I will contribute. Within the education space where I am currently, when there was realization that there's a shortfall within the country with regards to funding education, I got involved and I worked with a private entity, and together we arrived at a point where we structured a crowdfunding platform where students can actually go and raise funding. So structured funding is one area where I'll be able to contribute.
What is your take in the funding model, the present funding model of SABC? Lastly, do you think SABC should be sold out?
I believe within the funding model, or my take in the funding model, there's an element where we can explore further opportunities. The public commercial space where we can get involved with your private content producers, your script writers, where we can jointly create content that can be exported outside the borders of South Africa. Because currently the funding model predominantly focuses on raising revenue from advertising. And for us to then increase that element of advertising, it means we must then continue to produce or contribute in the production of quality content. With regards to SABC continuing as an entity, I think we need to be able to bring it up to a point where it operates independent of going all the time to source funding within the state.
No, Chair, I'm reluctant to say my last question, whether the SABC should be sold out or not.
No, we should not sell SABC. If we look at the mandate of SABC, is to educate the South African public, to entertain the South African public, to inform, to be a platform where production houses can grow, either by supplying content to the SABC or working gently with the SABC to export their content. There's no other facility that belongs to the state that can effectively contribute in that space. So by selling SABC, how are we as a country going to communicate amongst ourselves without paying huge sums of money by going through private-owned entities where we have to pay subscriptions? So I strongly believe we should not sell SABC.
If Honorable Dolatre is done, can I grab your few minutes, your few seconds? Just on the question of government funding SABC less than 3%, do you think that is necessary for SABC to account to Parliament?
Even if it was 1%, said they must account to Parliament. Because if you are funded by your main shareholder, you need to account with regards to how you utilize those funds. If you have acquired income, how have you used that extra income? By so doing, we then avoid a situation where corruption can happen, because without accountability, anyone can do whatever they want to do with those funds.
Is it only because of the funds that SABC gets that it is accounted to Parliament?
If you look at the objectives of the Act, the Honourable Member mentioned social cohesion. The centre of that within the country is Parliament. Now, if we miss an opportunity for that accountability to happen at a central point, this is where you end up getting SABC being dragged in different directions by different political parties, given that we have a huge landscape of political entities.
Okay. So more than anything else, it's the mandate that they are given to be a national broadcaster. Thank you very much, Honorable Kalako.
Thank you, Chair. Afternoon, Victor Rambau. Look, I'm interested because I can see your strength is on a turnaround strategy, and you do have some understanding of the act that governs operations. I'm sure you have. Followed the recommendations of or the report of the ad hoc committee and comments of COPA and the report of Auditor General on what was happening in the SABC, especially they've identified issues around the irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure. So how do you turn around and end it, which have been leaking millions, going to billions, for some period, if you are put in there now? How will you turn that around?
The PFMA is clear with regards to levels of authority around expenditure. What is critical at SABC is to maintain the discipline of adherence to all acts that we have at our disposal as SABC. That's the first part. The second part, by appointing capable people at executive level, meaning your CEO and the CFO and the COO, you should be able to manage this irregular and fruitless expenditure part. Thirdly, by having a proper plan for your financial year,
which is clear with regards to what are the investment opportunities that you need to put in place, be it care tax expenditure and different programs, and clearly articulate and agree together with the portfolio committee to say this is what we're going to deliver as an organization. You should be able to function within the confinements of the budget that you have in place, more so ensuring that you do not have projects that are delivered without properly following through the governance structure.
What is your attitude, or how will you react in a situation where the representative of the main shareholder, which is the government, comes in and interferes with all this process you are talking about to an extent of trying to amend illegally some of the documents which govern the operations and the relationships between the shareholder board and the executive? Will you fight that? Will you stand firm to what is right and make sure that that is not allowed?
I will definitely fight that, because the reason why all these frameworks are in place is for us to adhere to them. Unless there's a change that has gone through the formal structures and approved by all concerned parties to say this is how we need to move going forward on this element, as members of the board we must remain firm and not allow ourselves to be bullied, if I may put it that way. I mentioned in my opening that for me what is critical is the intellectual independence. When we've all understood our mandate, we must deliver on our mandate.
You reminded me when you, there's just, it's not on here, just for interest sake, since you said you were seconded to NESFAS, so that things can begin to be run properly, that the money is not leaking. What are you going to do, guys, with this, about this 14 million which you deposited in the account of a student, and already 800,000 is gone?
I was praying outside that question will not come. if I may, through your chair, be allowed to maybe expand a bit on it, because I think as a start, the article as it was written, it was not researched properly. We as NSFAS, we do not have a relationship with the company in point which has pushed on the 14 million rand to that student. The way the system works, which we've built, we push money to university which the student has signed for. So if the student signed for a 50 million rand loan, we'll pay that money to the university. However, because we pay in bulk, when the university decides to disperse money using the different forms that of systems that they have, they need to reconcile that. The money that we've pushed to the university is what the student has signed for. The money that the university has pushed to the student is a different matter, which we as NSFAS were not involved. So when it's time for us to account, we'll account for what we've paid for that particular student who found herself in the windfall of 14 million rand. Then the university will have to account back to us to say, we've given you 600 million rand. How have you used the 600 million rand? And it must balance with what we've given them. So what is most likely to happen, the university will find themselves in a negative on the money that was paid to that student, but not necessary, because they must sign what is given them.
Thank you very much, and if you want to pose a question to members, it's your time, but if you don't have a question, don't worry.
I do have one question, and this is to all members, given the experience and the time that they've been
in this space. For board members that are going to be appointed, what is the one area in the Act that you would want to sensitize board members to pay full attention to at all times and not allow ourselves to be moved out of that position from the Act's point of view?
Mr. Kongubela will represent us on that one.
So my question to the members was with regards to the Broadcasting Act, to say what section of that Act do you believe it's critical for all board members to at all given stage to know that section and make sure that they do not move or get moved from implementing that part of the Broadcasting Act?
I think as a starting point, it's important to know the entire Act. But however, for day-to-day operations, the Charter is critical. And naturally, the object of the Act itself and all its elements will actually govern the balance of your focus on the Charter and ensuring that the objectives articulated are realized.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kongubela, and thanks very much, Mr. Rambao. Go well, and let's have the next candidate. Thanks a lot for your contribution, sir.